everyone, and welcome to First Things First. It is a Friday. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. You had yourself a great night last night. Everything okay?
How we doing, people?
Doing great. I think the table here. Other than that, everything's great.
Yeah. All right. Well, we only have three
multi-network
hours
superstar
I'm big
Chris
and
Carter.
Clumsy this morning.
Right, you got to be.
Welcome
man.
To my corner.
You got here
it's
last
all good.
Night cheating on us with the Terry and Howie and Strahan. Doing double dip yesterday and
yeah, it's not necessarily cheating because we're all in the Fox family
yeah,
and
we
everything.
Are. Yeah,
oh,
we
it's
are.
Even it's even more hurtful when you cheat with a family member. See, but I'm happy. For
well,
you.
It's
good to see
yeah,
you.
That's kind of
so disturbing on so many levels.
Good morning, everyone.
We got a big Friday for you. We got more drama between Draymond and KD in the big world of basketball. Mm. Full slate of NFL action to preview. But let's start with the game that you previewed last night.
Great
on
dress,
Fox.
Jenna.
Thank you so much, sir. Thursday night football. Aaron
I know
Rodgers
you hate
me.
Say something. With
she got a highlight.
Seattle trying to keep their playoff hopes alive. In the first, feel free to compliment me. That was Rodgers to Robert Tonyan, 54-yard strike. Pack up 21-17. I'll catch up if you want a compliment. Fourth quarter, Seahawks down 4. Russell Wilson, shaky first three quarters for him. Figures it out in the fourth. That to Ed Dixon. Seattle up 27-24. Next drive, here's Rodgers. Incomplete on 3rd and 2. So Mike McCarthy decides they're going to punt. Despite only 4:20 left on the clock, with the Packers only having one timeout. Packers would never get the ball back. Mike Davis converts the first down, takes it to the 2-minute warning. That would be your final. Packers lose 27-24. They fall to 4-5-1. Here's Coach McCarthy on the decision not to go for it.
Obviously, it would have been a really bold move to go for it on 4th and 2, backed up at the 30. Did you give it any consideration?
I definitely. You know, we had the injuries to Kenny Clark and you know, Mike Daniels. So, yeah, it was definitely a consideration there. But with the one timeout and then, you know, ability to stop the clock at the 2 minutes. So we played the numbers, but we considered taking the timeout there and going for it on 4th and 2.
Aaron, is there any hope left for the season?
Come on, Rod. What kind of question is that?
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't.
Come on, man.
Can't win on the road. What are you going to be able to do?
I don't even know how to answer that, Rob. I mean, come on, what am I supposed to say? Of course there's hope. Of course we believe in each other. You know, we're just going to take one galvanizing moment. So whether that's a speech or a practice or something happens in the game, something's got to get this thing going. I thought we had moments tonight where that was the way we were going. You know, the defense, a lot of injuries. Offensively, we lost Jimmy, but guys battled. So, I mean, nobody gave up. Hope. You know, we just didn't play well enough when we had to play well enough.
There's a lot in this game to break down, but if you just take a step back, what do you think the overall key was in this matchup?
The Packers, the inability, because they had the lead from the beginning of the game. They were gifted a fumble early in the game, huge turnover on the road. They were able to take the crowd out of it. So at that point, especially with Aaron Rodgers, he's got on fire the second and the third quarter. How do we, as a young team, win these football games? And most of the time in the NFL, you have to be very, very accurate if you don't have a consistent running game in your short passing attack. That's what we see with Brady. That's what we see with Breeze in New Orleans. At the end of the games, they don't have to run the ball to be able to eat up the clock. They can throw it. Green Bay decided the second half, especially in the fourth quarter, they're going to continue trying to throw the football. And when those passes were incomplete, when they were not able to keep drives going, that allowed Seattle to get back on the field, and that's what happened. Late in the game, I thought they missed it in the broadcast on the third down and short. People were surprised McCarthy didn't go for it, which led to the question. I was surprised they didn't talk about the tip pass. When Aaron Rodgers misses the guy wide open in the flat, that ball was tipped. That ball comes out of his hand. You can see the defensive tackle gets a little piece of that ball. Now, people will talk about McCarthy should have went for it right then, but from Seattle, they couldn't get to Aaron Rodgers all day. They put consistent pressure, but in that situation, the defensive tackle makes that big play, that being the biggest play of the game because they didn't get the ball back. So people will talk about going for it. If they had run the ball in the second half, if you look at the number of snaps, normal NFL game, 65 snaps. Green Bay had 48 snaps. So you have to earn the right to be able to do that. They were on pace for that, but not enough first downs, not enough rushing attempts. The running backs had 12 times last night where they carried the ball. Aaron Jones carried it 11, only 4 times in the second half. I mentioned last week's games. Aaron Jones was the best Aaron on Green Bay's team. Now, Aaron Rodgers was special, but you got to be able to help him out. You got to be able to put these games away. You have to be able to run the ball. And when you don't attempt to run, to me, that led to them losing this game late.
Nick. And they could have run the ball in that third and two. Also, that's a pass Rodgers makes almost 100 times out of 100, which is why it had to be tipped or something had to have happened, because he does not miss that pass.
He said that. But that's exactly what he said. He said, if you give me 100 times, I would never do that again.
I didn't know if it – I didn't see it get tipped, and they didn't point out on the broadcast. I thought it stuck in his hand, which would have been odd given the – like, I didn't know what happened there. But I do know this. Mike McCarthy said after the game, we went with the numbers. No, you did not. That was – everything. You're right. They should have run the ball more. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't have been in this position. But you are. It's fourth and two for your season, and you punt the ball away, knowing you have those defensive injuries. Knowing that, here's what the math does tell you: with one timeout and 4:20 left, two first downs, and Aaron Rodgers never touches the ball again.
Mm-hmm.
You're down three. If you go for it.
So that's even without the injury.
That's without the injuries.
So even.
A fully healthy.
The pure numbers say you should go for it.
Of course.
Because you're not going to get the ball back. And that's not even baked into what's my defense? What is my defense playing like?
And what's the other team's running game
running
like?
Game.
Oh, it's the number one running attack in football. Oh, they've already popped us for $150 in this game. And last week hit their opponent for $270. It is fourth in your season. If you believe when you punt away, that, oh, we're going to force a three and out. Well, guess what? If you go for it on fourth down and don't force the three and you force the three and out, if you go for it on fourth down and don't get it, pardon me, guess what? If you force the three and out, you think you're forcing after the punt, you get the ball back down six. It's still touchdown wins the game. I cannot believe in this spot, fourth and two on his own 33-yard line, you would put yourself in position where you are relying on backup defensive players in order to get the ball back to Aaron Rodgers. I can't believe McCarthy did that.
And if McCarthy was looking at the numbers, he should have looked at the defensive numbers that they have. Because since the beginning of 2016 season, Jenna, no one in the NFL has given up more points on the road than the Packers, but Cleveland Browns, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So that's the list that they're on. So he's talking about, I went by the numbers. No, he didn't. Not the numbers this defense has been giving up. And the irony to it, what was the final score of the game?
27-24.
So you know as a Packer, I got to get the 31 because my defense this year has given up 30 on the road, 18 at home. So not only this season, but the last couple seasons, they've not been good on the – and he should know that as the head coach.
So where does that leave the Green Bay Packers now? You heard Aaron Rodgers
Screwed.
Say, sure, our chances are now.
Listen, they
– just the way we started the show.
Yeah. Fortunately for them, the reason they can hold on to some hope is one of the teams they're chasing, Minnesota, that's their next opponent. It's not going to be hard to get up for that game. Minnesota plays Chicago this weekend in a big divisional matchup, and then they get to play Minnesota. What up?
Yeah, Steve? and the Vikings have New England soon after that. So
the Vikings have New England.
Yeah.
Right.
So even though Green Bay's got to win, Minnesota's got a tough road ahead with those three contests
so
right there.
You can convince yourself that they have opportunities. But I'm going to go back to Aaron Rodgers walking off the field after the stirring comeback against San Francisco before the bye and use his words. He said, man, our next month of football is really tough. We're going to find out what we're all about. And here's what we found out in their first game. They fumble a kickoff and they lose a winnable game. In the next game, they fumble the ball in a tie game against the Patriots and they lose that game. They beat the Dolphins at home. And then in this game, you have fourth in your season for 2 yards. The risk v. reward is so skewed. And when I heard Mike McCarthy say, it'd be one thing if he said, you know what? I know what the numbers say, but I trust our defense.
Yeah,
I didn't like our protection.
Don't say that to my guy.
Don't
say that to my numbers guy.
Don't say you know what the numbers say and then you went against them. It was in a vacuum you go for that. In the context of the game where they're running all over you, your guys are injured, and you have Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, it is a no-brainer. And then for him to say, we thought about taking a timeout to go for it, no. This is you have to know on third down what you're doing.
Yes.
You have to know on third down. If it's incomplete, what are we doing? They blew two timeouts early in the game. They didn't have to. That's why they couldn't challenge what I thought was going to be an incomplete pass if
Definitely
they had challenged it.
Definitely on that touchdown drive, yes.
On the 34-yard play, Tyler Lockett. This was coaching mismanagement top to bottom. And the only saving grace for Green Bay is games like this might get them a new coach next year, and maybe Aaron Rodgers will have a schematic advantage for the first time in quite some time.
And not lost in all this was a good win for Seattle and for Russell Wilson, especially towards the end, which we will talk much more about that side coming up. But first, a little basketball on the other side. Did the Warriors drama just get a whole lot worse? Hear from Draymond Green next on First Things First.
Ever wonder how to get the hottest new sneakers, the ones that barely hit shelves? The answer, StockX, a revolutionary new marketplace for buying and selling 100% authentic sneakers, streetwear, watches, and handbags. Millions are already using StockX to find everything after it sells out, from the latest Yeezys to every retro Jordan to the hottest new streetwear from brands like Supreme and Bape. It even allows users to buy and sell pre-owned, excellent condition, luxury handbags and watches from brands like Louis Vuitton, Chanel, Gucci, Rolex, Omega, Tudor, and more. It uses the same principles as the stock market to make buying and selling as safe and easy as possible. You get real-time market data for intelligent buying and selling. It gives you access to tons of historical price data as well. See exactly how much an item has sold for in the past and how much it's selling for now, because it's crucial in knowing the value of the items you're buying. So go to StockX.com/FTF. That's StockX.com/FTF. StockX. Now you know.
Hey guys, there's a reason people don't want drama in their lives. Proof is in the Golden State Warriors. A lot of drama this week. Let's recap, all right? On Monday, Durant and Draymond got in a tiff. On Tuesday, Draymond was suspended. On Wednesday, Draymond said he spoke with KD. We'll get to Thursday in a second, but first, here's what he had to say.
I've read a lot about how, is this the end of the run, or is it over, or did I ruin it, or did I force Kevin to leave? You know, at the end of the day, as I've said before, whatever Kevin decided to do, whatever Clay decided to do, whatever who decides to do, you know, we had great years together, and I support everybody wholeheartedly, 100%, because as a man, as a human being, you got the right to do what you want to do with your life, and so I'll never question that. But what you must know is nobody in this organization, from a player, you know, not myself, not Kevin, not anybody else, is going to beat us, you know. So if you one of them other 29 teams in this league, you got to beat us. We're not going to beat us. This only makes Kevin, myself, and the rest of my teammates stronger. That's what it's going to do. So, you know, you think you saw something before. Good luck with us now. Like, we're not going to crumble off of an argument. We're going to move forward.
Well, it depends on what you mean by moving forward, Draymond. How did all the drama affect the Warriors last night against the Rockets? Well, Draymond scored no points. Klay and Durant hit no three-pointers, and the team got blown out 107-86 by the Rockets. I'd say it affected them. Oh, and Steph Curry couldn't save them as he continues to sit out with that groin injury. But according to Draymond, who spoke again post-game, the Warriors have no problems.
We didn't play our best game. It happens. You know, if those emotions are what caused us to lose, then it's my bad, you know. But, you know, we're not panicking or think like, oh, man, we're not a great team. We're still the best team in the league, and we're going to win more games and a bunch of games and go win another championship, and we'll be fine.
All right, one of the things that I learned here from both of you, you in basketball, you in football, is that a lot of stuff that happens off the field, off the court, shouldn't and doesn't affect stuff on the court because it's a game and these are grown men and they're doing their jobs. But with what happened this week, what was your reaction? Did that all culminate in what we saw on the court last night, Nick?
What we saw on the court last night was, as we've seen time and time again, this Warriors team, no matter how much talent they had, if Steph Curry's not playing, they're an average basketball team. I don't know how, I don't know why, when you have Durant and Clay and Draymond, it shouldn't be the case, but all the numbers say this year, last year, any year, if Steph's not out there, they're an average basketball team. Now, last night, it was exacerbated.
Well, most of the NBA teams that have two superstars or two all-stars, they're just above a 500 team in this new NBA. If you look around the league, if you only got two all-stars,
Right. Sure, I think
and
that
because you have more All-Stars, you don't have the type of bench that those other players will have as far as the veteran players. It becomes hard to win in this NBA.
Sure, I agree. But I think in most circumstances, I would think that a team with Durant and Clay and Draymond would be better than this team has been over the last 2 years when Steph's out. Like, I'm done with the discussion about who's the best Warrior. I don't care anymore. I know who the most important guy is. It's the guy who's sitting out with a groin injury right now in Steph Curry. But last night was just not about them not having Steph Curry. That was, to me, about the Warriors, and this surprised me. I was surprised they were 4-point underdogs in the game. I was surprised how they played in that game. I thought they'd rise to the occasion. I thought Durant would play a monster game. I thought he'd play angry. I thought he'd take more shots than he did. I thought that at the very least the Warriors would have something to prove to the outside world, even if it was lies. We're fine. Don't worry about us. We're still the Warriors. And last night, they did look like a team, to your point, Jenna, in disarray. They looked like a team that wasn't on the same page with each other.
That's one thing, man, I learned at a young age, and it came out of not playing basketball well, upset. When I was younger, I used to have a really bad temper. And my brother Butch went on to play in the NBA. He was totally the opposite, always calm, always cool. And he used to tell me, you can't play basketball like you play football. So it's nice to think, yeah, Kevin Durant, he's going to be mad. He's going to be upset. But you can't play basketball with vengeance unless you're a post player. Unless you're a guy that's going to take them into the paint, you can play mad in the post, but you can't as far as a skill level. Being mad doesn't hurt your doesn't help your jump shot, doesn't help you to be able to pass the ball. So being upset in basketball, it doesn't necessarily help you. So that's why you see a lot of guys who try to stay cool under the pressure, and we don't see a lot of guys who can be physical and be mad and play effectively for a long period of time. So I didn't expect that. And Kevin Durant is not a conflict guy. And if you're in a relationship with a person who likes to deflect conflict like Kevin Durant does, that's why you have burner Twitter accounts. He is not a confrontational person. So I didn't think he would take this and go the right way with it. He's not that type of person. Now, Draymond, he can do that. But Draymond, when you have guys on your team like him, regardless of how much you're winning, he wears on you. He wears on you day after day. Now, Draymond, if he had gotten to this same confrontation with Boogie Cousins, I could have thought, yeah, this would help the Warriors because both of these guys can take it. And there's a lot of truth to this. Kevin Durant is leaving. Kevin Durant does have the organization in the palm of his hand, and he can decide to do whatever. He's the only one that can do that. But the reason why I'm not going to panic is because the MVP in the NBA, he was over on the sideline in street clothes.
Right.
And there is no answer for Steph Curry. And also, Cousins is going to be with him at some point this season. So, man, they're going to drill Houston. They're going to drill some teams in the playoffs. So I'm not going to overreact to this. But this is a foregone conclusion. Kevin Durant, they will never be able to repair the stuff that Draymond said to him, the stuff that he told him, and Durant knows that there's a lot of truth to what Draymond was saying.
Well, and the reason that Durant was so wounded by this, and I read Chris Haynes' great story that has almost the exact quotes word for word. It's as good of an accounting of it as I've seen. I listened to Zach Lowe and Howard Beck talk about this. I really tried to go deep on everything that was happening here. The reason Durant was so wounded by this is Draymond, in that moment on the bench, forget calling him the B word, but when he said to him, go ahead and leave, we don't need you, right, we won without you, you know who Draymond was? All those folks on Twitter that Durant be arguing with. All those folks that Durant still is still dealing with that. Durant made a legacy move to go to Golden State, and it hasn't given him the legacy points he thought he was getting. He's dealing with that from strangers on the internet sending him snake emojis all day,
to now the
every
NBA
day,
greats.
And now his own teammate, 3 feet from him, is saying everything. Because in Chris Haynes' article, it says Durant wasn't really reacting to Draymond repeatedly calling him the B word. It was when he said, we don't need you, we won without you, that Durant visibly winced. And that's when the team, according to his article, that's what the team said. That's a line you cannot cross.
Yeah, and leave now.
Yeah.
Like, that's hard. Like, okay, so forget about we're going to win this championship. Like, you can leave right now. I believe those things, the combination of them, will have a lasting effect.
It may be a foregone conclusion that he's gone, but what does that mean for this season? Does that affect them this season, or do we look back and say, oh, that was a little hiccup they had and whatever? Or do you really think that somehow this is going to permeate and become a problem all season
long?
Well,
some of the effect it's going to have on them is socially. How much interaction are they going to have together? Because I just don't see. I haven't been around
a
lot of
athletes. Does that translate into success?
I just don't see a lot of athletes that you can speak that way to and continue the same way. It's no different than the relationships that we're in. When you got significant people in your life, there's a certain level of respect you are expecting. And you are not expecting that person, because of the commitment to the relationship, to step across the line. Kevin Durant's not committed to the relationship. He's only committed to this regular season. So now what I say to you don't necessarily matter, because we ain't committed long term. You're not going to be here. Draymond is stuck there unless they decide, the organization decides to side with Kevin Durant and move Draymond. But, you know, when you're in a committed relationship, you got to be careful what you say. And there are lines that you cannot cross. And I believe Draymond crossed one. It will affect them how they are. Anytime Steph Curry got to come over to your house to try to be able to solve some grown man problems, you know you do have issues.
When you say there's lines you can't cross, we're all in, like you said, committed relationships. And we all probably know something we could say to the significant other, the nuclear option, that there's no coming back from. Like, there's a line you cannot cross. And Draymond, I do feel, crossed that line with Kevin Durant. It wasn't calling him the B word. I understand for C, that's a trigger for you, and you've talked a lot about, man, you say that in an NBA, NFL locker room, those are fighting words. But Durant responded, that was, especially being around Draymond for years. You know Draymond, like Jalen Ramsey, a little spicy mouth, as you would say.
Yes, sir.
He's going to pop off sometimes. Draymond went with the single most cutting thing he could say to Kevin Durant.
Intentionally.
Intentionally. Yes. And that is hard to come back from. Now, to your question, I still think Draymond's right about what he said. We're going to win a bunch of games. We're going to win another championship. But
oh, that could be true.
But what was, in my eyes, Durant already had the wandering eye. And he was already planning an exit. The only way he was going to stay was an overwhelming joy of the season. The joy that the Warriors had in the 73-win season. That is gone now. So now I don't see a way that this thing continues past this year. I don't think it's Draymond's fault, but Draymond certainly didn't help the situation.
Wow. No one saw this playing out this way.
Watch
like
that wonder
sand through the hourglass. Listen, Steph has had to come over to my house. Well, she lives there, okay. But there have been times where she's had to. Coming up, why is
Boogie even gotten
Carson Wentz afraid of the Saints? Here from him next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, Mark Schlereth. On the program, survived the snow last night.
I
made
did,
it here.
I
you
did.
Walked 6.5 miles to get here.
My
this
man's
morning.
From
we
Alaska.
Appreciate it.
This was a light
oh,
dust.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Come on. This
I was
is
making
a dusting.
Snow angels in the street.
Bringing people with you, carrying them down the street.
Right, in the middle of the street, just making snow angels.
I love it. All right. The reality in the NFL, let me tell you guys, since you don't know anything about it. If you're in the playoff hunt, even from a distance, every game's a big game. And for the 4-5 defending Super Bowl champion Eagles, who have to head to New Orleans this weekend to play one of the hottest teams in the league, it is definitely a big game. Here's the Eagles quarterback Carson Wentz on his team's strategy to end New Orleans' 8-game win streak.
They've, as of late, gotten up on teams early. You know, we have a ton of confidence in our defense, but, you know, that's a heck of an offense over there. We don't try and look too much into that, because at the end of the day, we have high expectations and standards on the offensive side of the ball. We realize we have some things we got to clean up, especially in situational football, some of it being red zone and those sorts of things. And so we realize, you know, we may have to score, but again, we have a lot of confidence in our defense, and we're excited. This is going to be a fun matchup.
Stink, that's a tall order for the Eagles to try to slow down this Saints offense. How do they do it? Where do they even start?
Well, I think the first thing you have to do offensively, if you're the Saints,
Eagles.
If you're the Eagles, you got to stay on the football field. You watch the Saints play offense, and it is a thing of beauty. First off, there's no coincidence in the best three teams in the league, the Saints, the Rams, and the Kansas City Chiefs, all have outstanding offensive lines. And I think the Saints are the best of the three, the best of the bunch. They're outstanding. And so one thing that the Eagles are going to have to do is when you watch the Saints, it's everybody involved, and they do everything well. It doesn't matter if it's Kamara. Doesn't matter if it's Ingram. It doesn't matter throwing the football. They are going to put points on the board. They are going to essentially, they're going to go after you, and they're going to do it in a myriad of different ways. You got to keep them on the sideline. Like, when I watch, you're not going to slow down or you're not going to completely halt this Saints offense. There are too many weapons. There are too many opportunities. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, even when you talk about a kid like, what's the kid's name, Taysom Hill?
Taysom Hill.
That kid
the package they run for him.
He's amazing. Last week, he lined up. One, he was the kick returner. Then he lined up at quarterback. He lined up at wide receiver. Mm-hmm. He lined up at tight end, not mm-hmm. only in yep. line, but in the slot.
Yep.
I mean, like, he lined up at H-back and running back. Like, there was no place they didn't put it. And it's not like Baltimore. You know, have you watched Joe Flacco's body language when they bring in Lamar Jackson? Yes. He's like,
it's so bad. His wife criticized.
Right, yeah, right.
His wife told him, look like a football player.
Drew Brees runs out, like, he's going, I'm going to go catch a pass, maybe. Like, Drew Brees is excited about it. Like, they genuinely, as much as the Philadelphia Eagles loved playing together last year, and there's something about that chemistry that you talked about yesterday. You just can't create that. It happens. Mm-hmm. You put the Saints on film, and you're like, these dudes. I'm just sitting there with my clicker going, these dudes love each other.
Yeah, the difference is they don't have to tell everybody
that
they're doing
it. What about Dez Bryant being there for a half a week? Now, you know this does not happen, especially with wide receivers, diva, all the stuff coming about. Every time they get into the end zone, they sending out a tribute to Dez by throwing up the X's.
Yeah.
That speaks to the stuff you're talking about.
Last week, some dude with 18 came out off the practice. I don't even know his name. 18. I'm like, who's 18? Got a 43-yarder. You know, hey, I'm open. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, going back to the Eagles, what do you have to do? Well, you're going to have to change some of your game plan. Mm-hmm. You better possess the ball. You better slow this thing down. The average game has 12 possessions per side. You better slow that down to about 8 if you can, 8 or 9. If you give them the full 12 possessions in a game, they're going to beat you.
And you mentioned the offensive line. It's a great point. Very few people in this offensive era that we're seeing in 2018, very seldom are we ever going to talk about. But these offensive lines and those three that you mentioned, the Rams, we know what they do. Mm-hmm. Kansas City, we talk about all the skilled guys on both those teams, but you painted a great picture. These are three of the better offensive lines that we have. Now, huge question mark over the next month. Saints lost their left tackle. Mm-hmm. All right, so with him being out, one of the best left tackles, Armstead, what are they going to do? But the thing that makes you smile is Sean Payton, as an offensive coordinator, we talk about McVay, what he's doing with the Rams. Sean Payton's been doing this for a long time, and no one stresses your defense, puts pressure on your defense, and like Belichick, gets his guys to do what they do special and doesn't have them and let their weaknesses be exploited in NFL games. Sean Payton is special, and let's see what he creates week in and week out, because he's going to do that against the Eagles.
Real quick, and you're 100% right, but Jermon Bushrod has been a Pro Bowl player, and I was at Saints camp this year and worked some with the offensive line as just kind of a day-long consultant, you know, and it was in the meetings. It was awesome. The Saints, they couldn't have treated me any kinder. But Bushrod is a guy that's a former Pro Bowler that wants to, like, he's there because he wants to be there, because he understands how good this team is. He's played forever, and he's like, this is a great opportunity. And he is playing. He's fresh-legged, and he's a guy that's very skilled. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, as good as Armstead is, they're not going to miss a beat. And that, when you have that kind of depth and that, again, that kind of chemistry where people just are there because they're like, damn, I want to be a part of this. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I could retire or I could have gone somewhere else and had a chance to start, you know, but I want to be here because this is special.
So we know that Philly, if they're going to have any chance, you mentioned time of possession, score some points, score a bunch of points.
Right.
But how are they going to slow down the Saints? The Eagles' secondary has been the biggest weakness on their team. I think it's been the single biggest reason they're 4-5 instead of having a winning record, instead of being 6-3, as a lot of us thought they'd be at this point in time. And their secondary is going to be worse in this game. At least worse personnel than it's been at any point all year. They now don't have. They lost Darby in their last game.
They have one starter from
Malcolm
where they
Jenkins
started, from where they started to see.
He's the only guy left of their initial starting secondary. So that's going to put even more pressure on that defensive front to be what it was last year, which was the strength of the team, even more so than Carson Wentz in the passing game, that rotational pass rushers. But this is where the Saints put you in such bad positions. because of that offensive line, Saints are allowing the second fewest sacks in football. Yeah. You can't just play the pass because they're the number eight rush offense in football. And that's with Mark Ingram not even playing the first quarter of the season. Mm-hmm. Like, that, you know, they're not turning the ball over. Drew Brees only thrown one interception all year long. The only way that I think the Eagles can make this a competitive game, much less win it, is if they have their biggest pass rush game of the year. I said it yesterday. You loved this stat. 84% of drives that have a sack do not result in a first down or a touchdown. If you get a sack's not a turnover, but it is damn close. Once you get a sack, mm-hmm. that is the definition of a drive killer. And so the Saints haven't been giving up any because of the offensive right. line, but that's the Eagles' only path, because it's almost impossible to win the turnover battle against a team whose quarterback never throws picks, because fumbles are random and luck, like who falls on them. So how are you going to get the requisite possessions? How are you going to get them off the field? You got to have your pass rush show up. Unfortunately for Philly, they've had a league average pass rush this year, which, given the talent they have on that line, should not be the case.
Quick question before we break. We've heard a lot of mixed messages from Doug Peterson, and it's something that's bothered you at least all week. Now that you've gone back and forth with your team and you're going up against a team like the Saints, what is the message? What's that last thing you say to this Eagles team before they come out and face the Saints, so at least they're galvanized in some way?
Jenna, I bring that back to the underdog. I bring back those masks and everything. That's what I would go back to, because right. I know it works. They're going to be the underdog the rest of the season. Look at the Eagles' remaining schedule. Happens to be the toughest in the National Football yep. League. Because now, maybe the Eagles might understand. Doug Peterson might understand. The league office, right down the street, Park Avenue, whoever wins that Super Bowl, ask the Patriots. Everything is set up for them not to repeat based on scheduling, prime time, not continuity in the schedule, everything. And the Eagles have played that way, helped them out. So not getting it easier yeah. coming down the stretch.
I think one thing you have to understand, and I know we're tight, but you talked about the pass rush, Nick. Here's the deal. The Saints are so balanced, and they're so good at everything. You know how many legit pass rush opportunities you get?
Right.
You get about eight a game when you play the Saints. Tops. Because the ball is out. It's on time. They've got great rhythm to the offense. They're rarely off schedule. And they run the ball. So, hey, good luck. Here's Drew Brees, one of the best that's ever played the game. He's smart. He's intelligent. He knows exactly where he wants to go with the football. And you're going to get eight legitimate opportunities that go beyond 2.7 seconds where he holds the ball. Good luck. You got eight tries to get the guy. Good luck. I hope it works out for you. You know what? Hasn't worked out for anybody.
No.
All right, Mark, stick around. Coming up, Zeke says the Cowboys have their backs against the wall. That's next. First things first. Stories to start your morning. Some fun news from our family to your family. Fox Sports has reached a multi-year deal to keep Major League Baseball on Fox through 2028. You know what that means? More swish to go around.
What do you mean, Jenna?
Nick
we got
Swisher.
More baseball?
We got more high-energy guys.
Swisher, this
yeah,
is great.
Swish.
This is awesome. Like, this was getting the NFL package, obviously, in the early 90s, really kind of put Fox on the map as
yes,
a network.
25 years ago.
And baseball and Joe Buck doing the World Series.
Thursday night package.
This whole thing, this is great. I'm so excited, part of the new Fox thing. That is, it's great.
I am such a huge MLB fan. I'm
got baseball
really
in your family.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love it.
Very
All right,
excited.
Back to Thursday Night Football. Russell Wilson had a solid performance, at least late in the game in the Seahawks win. He threw for 225 yards. And two touchdowns. What did you make of Russell Wilson's night, CC?
I thought Russ, especially early with the struggling start, this is what good quarterbacks do. He was able to show some resolve, get himself back together. I like the fact that he's not running the ball as much. Good game planning, what they've done. Brian Schottenheimer has changed this offense. Very, very effective. At the end, they blitz him. Russell beats him with the quick throw.
And we got to start giving Russell Wilson credit as one of the best fourth quarter quarterbacks in the entire league. We talk about Brady. We talk about Rodgers. Yeah. How about Russell? Last year, 19 fourth quarter touchdowns. This year, once again, he's brought his team back either to win or come right there in multiple fourth quarters.
You think about quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls. They're all, you know, the prototypical 6'4", 6'5", 240, stand in the middle of the pocket. He was a runaround quarterback when he won a Super Bowl early in his career. This guy has become, even at 5'11", or whatever he is, a straight drop back, eat you up from the pocket quarterback.
Yeah, he's trying to steal Tom Brady's little thing. Tom Brady's winning on and off the field. Russell Wilson, every time you mention him, mention his wife.
Oh, yeah, he's winning everywhere.
Mr. Sierra.
Yes.
All right, it's Mrs. and it's Sierra. But other than that was perfect, Jenna.
Nailed it.
Now, he's
finally
got a trophy wife.
Stink.
tall trophy.
Your Broncos heading to L.A. to face the Chargers. Phillip Rivers says it's always a challenge to prepare for the Broncos defense. Stink, what are you expecting from this matchup?
Well, I mean, first off, you look at the Broncos. Offensively, they have not played consistent football. Their quarterback has not played consistent football. The Chargers are a really good football team. They're a really consistent football team that runs the ball exceptionally well. And Phillip Rivers, I was talking to Phillip Rivers last weekend because I called their game, and I was like, it felt like a scene right out of Anchorman. I, straight up hate you, but I so much respect, however that line goes, right?
Yes.
Like Wes Mantooth, right? Like if I didn't respect you so much, that type of thing. He is one of the quarterbacks in this league that there is such a love-hate for him because of the way he plays the game and the antagonistic role that he plays. Mm-hmm. But you have so much respect for the way he plays. And he looked straight at me. And I was like, I both love you and hate you at the same time. And I go, how does that make you feel? And he said, and I quote, if they didn't hate me, I wouldn't be worth a crap. And I was like, what? That's really good. That's Phillip Rivers. He's the guy that even at this stage of his career, it's as though he's like, hey, listen, you go down to the fire hydrant, cut in. You go down, don't hit the swing set because that's out of bounds.
They're drawing up in the dirt a lot, it looks
right.
Like.
He is. I mean, he's just orchestrating. He's like, at the end of the day, this is just like I was 10 years old out in the park playing. And I think that's what the players love about this childlike enthusiasm that he brings to the game every single time he plays.
And the difference between the Chargers this year and the Chargers the last few years, yes, Rivers is playing at arguably the highest level he's played, but he has the best team around him he's had since the 13-3 team with Marty Schottenheimer and LaDainian Tomlinson.
Yes.
Or the 14-2 team with Marty Schottenheimer and LaDainian Tomlinson.
That'll get you fired.
Right.
14-2.
If you lose first playoff game, it certainly will. This team around him is extraordinary. They got, I think, fortunate in the draft that Derwin James was there, and then they were smart for taking him. Mm. Both Melvins on the team, Gordon and Ingram, are playing like all-pro caliber guys.
Yes, got off the slow starts, now really evolving as stars in this league.
And last year they spent a high draft pick on Mike Williams and didn't get any production out of him last year, I think due to injury. He was dinged up. And this year you're starting to see him as a complement to Keenan Allen, who's been one of the more underrated players in the league the last few years. This is a very dangerous football team that probably wins this weekend. Then they get Arizona, and then a huge matchup against the Steelers before they get the Chiefs later in the year. And by then, Joey Bosa should be back, and they'll be even more dangerous.
All right, let's move on to the Dallas Cowboys. They'll head to Atlanta to take on the Falcons. Both teams 4-5 entering this one. Both heading in seemingly different directions, with the Falcons coming off a bad loss to the Browns and the Cowboys coming off a big win over the Eagles. Ezekiel Elliott knows how big this matchup is and says that going forward, every game is important.
It's hard to even need extra motivation when you're going to this game 4-5. You know what I mean? For the rest of this season, our backs are going to be against the wall. We have to do the best we can to, go out there and try to win every one of these last games. So, I mean, and those guys on the other side, they're feeling the same way. So, I mean, looking to go in there, battle, and, doing everything we can to go out there and get a win.
All right, Mark, if you're the Cowboys, what is your game plan against this Falcons team?
Well, understand, I think first and foremost, understand what you do well, right? What you do, there's two things that set the Cowboys apart. When they are moving and they are running the ball and they are setting themselves up where their quarterback is also a run-pass threat and they give the RPO games to Dak Prescott, they're really hard to defend, right? But what that does for you in the long run, it allows the best part of your team to shine. And that's your front seven, and that's your ability to rush the passer. I mean, they are outstanding. You watched that Philly game from last week. They just came out and said, we're going to out-hit you on the defensive side of the ball.
Yes.
We are absolutely going to smother you. We're athletic. They've got with Van Der Esch and Smith, they've got two of the best young linebackers flying around.
Did he not look
around.
Like Brian Urlacher out there with that big neck roll on and everything?
Yeah, right? Right. Normally, when you got a neck roll, you got that dude can't run.
Right.
That's right. The first thing you think.
Absolutely.
When you see a dude, remember old Tyrone Stowe? He was like, he had this neck roll that was like that big. And he just...
That's look for the neck roll and the knee brace.
I'm not kidding you.
You know which guy to go after. If he's got a neck roll or a knee brace on, go after
right,
that guy.
Right, yeah. You know he can't run, but you know one thing he can do is go straight ahead and hit you in the
and
lips,
Vander
Esch right?
can do both.
Yes, yeah. I mean, so they've got two great young linebackers that can just fly around, make plays, a great pass rush. That's complementary football. And that's to win on a consistent basis, you have to know, I think more than anything, you got to know who you are, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, know who you are and who they are. If they run it and they use the RPO game and they set Dak Prescott up with the play action stuff off that, it allows them, instead of having, like we just talked about, 8 opportunities to rush the passer, now all of a sudden they're going to have 16 opportunities to rush the passer. And if you give those guys 16 legit opportunities, you're going to hit Matt Ryan. You're going to create a turnover or two.
Listen, their game plan, in my eyes, should be a carbon copy of what they did against Philly, at least offensively. Defensively, it's different because Atlanta is such a dynamic team throwing the football. They haven't been as dynamic rushing the football this year as I think some people thought they could be. But they can kill you with Matt Ryan, Julio, Calvin Ridley, who we just showed. But for the Cowboys offensively, this is a game where, because you want to keep that offense off the field, similar to what we talked about in the last segment, I want Zeke to have his season high in carries. We've talked all year long about 20 to 25 carries. If you can get Zeke 25 to 30 carries in this football game and see what that opens up for Amari Cooper, see if Dak Prescott, who had 270, which seems to be about as high as he can get throwing the football, see if he only needs 225 in this game because you're not throwing the ball more than 20, 22, 23 times. Like, Zeke is your best option. You saw that in the Philly game, and you have to, at this point, I think, trust that your offensive line is going to be better with the switch of the guard, the rookie, Connor Williams. They replaced him with Xavier Suofilo.
Yes.
You talked about how that also made them change to a more physical combo block style of blocking.
Way better last week.
And so now all of a sudden you can be who you thought you were at the beginning of the year, a team that's going to have a very good front seven and a team that's going to punish people with your running game.
Yeah, I don't know what Dallas is going to do. Once I think I know what they're going to do, Jenna, we always say that it seems simple, Chris. Right. They should be doing this. Yes. After their game last week, Dallas typically, they go back, and I don't know what type of film they watch. I hope they don't watch their game last week. You've been, why, Chris, they were successful. Watch what Cleveland did. Watch two players on Cleveland, Baker Mayfield and Nick Chubb. Chubb rushed for over 170 yards against them. That's your Ezekiel Elliott. And if Dak Prescott cannot play better than Baker Mayfield played against this Atlanta defense, that's when you're talking about giving an extension. You're talking about, man, investing all this type of money. And we saw the rookie, what he did to this defense last week. We saw Chubb as a rookie, what he did to this defense. Dallas with that massive offensive line. You schooled us. You told us, hey, man, they're not doing much zone blocking. They're doing much comboing. They're getting up on them linebackers. Man, let's lean on this Atlanta defense. They're undersized. They fly around like one of those old Tony Dungy-type defense. Let's lean on them. I would go for a season high in carries with Zeke. If he touched the ball 30 times in Atlanta, I think that's the recipe for success.
Can I ask you a question real quick? Do you think Dak can make the throws Baker made last week?
I'm just going to tell you, Nick, it's embarrassing as an NFL player because we're a copycat league. We copy techniques. Stink will tell you, man, he sees a guy work with a technique, guy lead with his left step, he drives off, fires his left hand into a guy's breastplate. It's like, hey, that worked on this guy. He's trying to duplicate that next week. We try to duplicate what we see on film.
I would go and say, give me, when I was playing, I don't care when they played, let me see what Bruce Matthews did on this guy. I want to see his sets. Let me see what Steve Wisniewski did. Oh, they played 2 years ago? Grab me that film because I want to watch exactly how one of the best in the business, you know, and I would look at those guys. You know one guy I would never look at, though? Your boy, Randall McDaniel.
Oh, no, he's a freak. You can't watch him. Technique bad.
Like, terrible, like, hockey stick. His leg was like a hockey stick. I was like, oh, God, I can't see. And he would do things that were like no human on the planet should be able to do, and he'd still just absolutely dispense justice.
And the reason why you pick those two players, if you look at where Dak is, Dak knows way more football with all those starts, his experience. He should be able to do that. It's an indictment on him if he can't. If Zeke, with that offensive line, against the same defense, can't do the same thing, Zeke, no, he can do it.
Yes.
All right?
Yeah.
The thing is Dak, because they have to be in a pair. They're only good as a pair of being effective if the Cowboys are going to reach their potential and continue this drive to get back into the playoffs.
All right, Mark, stick around. Coming up, did Mike McCarthy blow it for the Packers last night? Did pin this on the head coach? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Mark Schlereth, we are going viral. So the Seahawks led the league in creative touchdown celebrations.
That's good.
And they didn't disappoint last night with the coordinated surf ensemble.
I feel like Mark Schlereth's a surfer.
Alaska,
no.
Right?
Oh, come on.
No.
Never off the Aleutian Islands?
No,
body
no.
Suit?
It's a great, you know what, it's a great tide, though. The second highest tide in all of the world. Right yeah. there off the Aleutian Islands.
So why aren't you surfing when you were growing up? What are you doing?
That water's about 32 degrees.
Maybe 32 and a half, 33, 32 probably.
Yeah, but you're
it
yoked.
It moves. It doesn't freeze.
Boom. You don't feel that.
When you're yoked, though, you body fat. You do feel it more because
right.
you got less fat
As
to be
I
able
was
to
saying.
Absorb.
I'm so fat, I hover above the water. That's how fat I am.
Yeah. You should ask his dad, man. His dad's the real star.
Yeah, I feel like your dad was a surfer.
Poolside. Yeah. They call him poolside. Yeah, of course he is.
Right now, what's he doing?
Push-ups.
Sticking with this game, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers in Seattle trying to keep their playoff hopes alive. First quarter, here we go. Rodgers hits Robert Tonyan with the 54-yard strike. Aaron Rodgers fired up. Packers up 21-17 at the half. Fourth quarter now. Seahawks down four. Russell Wilson after a shaky first three figures it out in the fourth. Ed Dixon for the touchdown. Seattle up 27-24. Next drive. Rodgers. Incomplete on third and two, and Mike McCarthy decides to punt despite only 4:20 left on the clock with the Packers only having one timeout. Packers would never get the ball back. Mike Davis converts the first down, takes it to the two-minute warning. Packers lose 27-24. They fall to 4-5-1. Here is the aforementioned Coach McCarthy on the decision not to go for it.
Obviously, it would have been a really bold move to go for it on fourth and two, backed up at the 30. Did you give it any consideration?
I definitely. You know, we had the injuries to Kenny Clark and you know, Mike Daniels. So, yeah, it was definitely a consideration there. But with the one timeout and then, you know, ability to stop the clock at the 2 minutes. So we played the numbers, but we considered taking the timeout there and going for it on fourth and two.
Is there any hope left for this season?
Come on, Rod. What kind of question is that?
I don't know. I mean,
come on, man.
Can't win on the road. What are you going to be able to do?
I don't even know how to answer that, Rob. I mean, come on. What am I supposed to say? Of course, there's hope. Of course, we believe in each other. You know, we're just going to take one galvanizing moment. So whether that's a speech or a practice or something happens in the game, something's got to get this thing going. I thought we had moments tonight where that was the way we were going. You know, the defense, a lot of injuries. Offensively, we lost Jimmy, but guys battled. So, I mean, nobody gave up hope. You know, we just didn't play well enough when we had to play well enough.
All right, Mark, from what you saw, what do you think was the key? How would you break down what happened last night?
Well, I mean, one galvanizing moment, fourth down and two, convert it. There's your galvanizing moment right there.
Yeah.
That could have been your galvanizing moment. And that was it. I mean, there's a what we used to call on the West Coast dragon, right? Drag slant.
Yes,
that's all they
absolutely.
Ran right there. Like three jet dragon. Let's go. It's wide
the
open.
The third and two.
The third and two, and you dirt it. But the bottom line is the thing that has been so impressive, and I've had the opportunity to call a couple of Seahawks games. This team is consistently under Pete Carroll improved. Regardless of all the different changes from a personnel standpoint, this is a different defense, but they have come together, they've consistently improved, and I think the biggest thing about the Seahawks is they have established their identity. And I think that is so important when you play football, to know who you are. We just talk about the Cowboys all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are they gonna? Are they what? Are they
Yes.
Will they run it?
Do they believe it?
Will Zeke get 25? I mean, there's like we see them play really well one week, and the next week you're like, who are these guys? The Seahawks know exactly what the formula is, right? They are gonna run the ball. They're gonna control the tempo. Russell Wilson in that fourth quarter, man, how many great play actions? 6 and 7 man protections. Did you see? I mean, he's flagging the ball out here. He's running over here. He's set up. Fullback's running across, kicking out the outside, and they're throwing a crossing route, you know, to lock it. I mean, it's stuff that takes time to develop, but they know exactly who they are. And they knew four-minute offense. They knew when they got that ball back at 420, they're like, we are going to cram it down your gullet, and there's nothing you can do about it. Like, they know who they are.
Stink, in that 4 minutes, didn't you not know that Russell was going to run at one time to be able to get one of those touchdowns?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I knew they were going to try to put it away, so you're talking about as far as identity?
Yeah.
No, we're going to do play action, but to be able to win this game compared to how Green Bay attacked it, and I couldn't believe McCarthy didn't go for it on fourth down. Since last year, about the middle to end of last season, we have seen unprecedented time.
Yes.
NFL coaches, they have gotten them a set of, well, they've gotten some guts.
Yes.
Or however you want to say it. They have gone for it, like unconventional wisdom, what the paper says, go for it. They're starting to look, hey, listen, I'm going to start taking more chances. It led to Philadelphia, Doug Peterson, Ron Rivera's been, Riverboat Ron, he's been
Sean
doing
McVay
it.
Sean McVay does it.
Sean McVay. So now we get to the biggest moment in Green Bay season. Mm-hmm. Their coach decides that, hey, I got two of my key defenders out. This defense, for the last 2 years, since the beginning of 2016, we have given up more points on the road than every team except two. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Cleveland Browns. I don't know what told him. He had no sheet that told him that I shouldn't go for it with those types of stats.
And the team you're playing, just on their previous drive, became the first team in 15 years to go for a buck 50 on the ground in seven straight games. You are going up against the most prolific rushing attack in football that, even though they're not winning every week, is hitting everybody over the head for at least 150 yards on the ground every single week.
So what numbers was he looking at?
He's making the numbers up.
Yes.
You called it getting a set of guts. I would say activating part of your brain. Just saying, what gives me the best chance to win? Or even if you're not into the numbers, how about a more kind of more intangible question? What's my opponent hoping I do? What was Pete Carroll on that fourth down praying the Packers
please
did?
Punt.
Please punt. Please punt.
Right.
Punt the ball. Punt the ball. Trust your defense. You should trust your defense.
Right.
Maybe we won't run it. It is maddening. Listen, I get it. Rodgers missed that pass. You saw it get tipped. He said after the game it stuck in his hand, which maybe led to it getting tipped.
Okay.
Regardless, Rodgers in this football game completed two passes that flew in the air 50-plus yards. That hadn't happened this decade in the NFL. Rodgers was on fire, and he misses a pass, and you're like, well, now we're going to trust our defense with our season on the line. You trust
one timeout.
One timeout.
Right.
And it was, again, worst case scenario on that fourth and down. You don't pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
When you punt, you say, we believe we're forcing a three and out. If you go for it on fourth and you don't pick it up, if you force the three and out, you believe you were forcing.
Right.
Guess what?
You're down six. You just have a couple more first downs you have to pick up.
Right. And you're down six. A touchdown still wins.
Mm-hmm.
At three, a touchdown wins. At six, a touchdown wins. It's unforgivable by Mike McCarthy.
So for years, there have been these quiet whispers that maybe Mike McCarthy isn't the best guy for this job. When you have the best player in football as your quarterback and you are not either surrounding himself with great players or finding ways to win games or getting to the Super Bowl one time when you have Aaron Rodgers, some of those quiet whispers turn to growing speculation, which is what we're hearing now, that Mike McCarthy isn't going to last through this season.
At
the end of the season.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Where do you stand on that? Would that be the right coaching move for this team?
I think it goes back to, and there's a lot of coaches that have this philosophy, after you've been at a place for X number of years, it's time. We all need at some point a fresh start. I mean, there's very few people, whether it's coaching or whether it's playing, that can start with one organization and finish with one organization. So sometimes your players need a different voice. You need a different way of looking at things. You just need to bring some juice into the organization. And I would say right now, you look at where they're at, it's inexcusable. Inexcusable to have Aaron Rodgers on your team and not to have participated in more than one Super Bowl. He is so damn good at everything. Like, how can you be in this position? And at that point, you have to look at yourself very critically and say, we haven't done enough for him.
And listen, I get it. There's a sliding doors moment against this very team, NFC Championship game a few years ago, up 12, of about 4 minutes left, and you blew it. That sucks. Like, maybe that wasn't on the head coach. They muff an onside kick. They don't get the toss in overtime. Things go against them. But you have had a decade. How many teams in this decade have been to multiple Super Bowls with lesser quarterbacks? How many teams have been to at least one with lesser quarterbacks? I mean, Jim Harbaugh had 4 years in San Francisco with Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick and made as many Super Bowls and as many NFC Championship games as we've seen from the Packers in the last decade. Like, what's going on there? There isn't a defense for. So I understand that winning that Super Bowl buys you a lot of time. Mm-hmm. I think that time is running out here in about 6 weeks.
And Mike McCarthy, I think this is 13th year in Green Bay. Mm. And you bring up a great point as far as it's hard for a coach at a high level to continue that same message. Now, you have to realize, once you become a head coach in the NFL, you're not really going to a whole bunch of coaching clinics to be able to find out, how do I add to this? There are only a few guys, Bill Belichick, Nick Saban, guys keep evolving as coaches. So it's hard for a guy to get new messaging points. So typically it takes a change of scenery. It takes him going somewhere else, giving that message to other people. And Terry Bradshaw brought it up last night in the telecast, and it all he believed stemmed from his sources that he had talked to came from that playoff game where they were up by 12 and McCarthy pulled the reins on Aaron Rodgers. Ever since then, they've had a tough, tough relationship. Aaron Rodgers talked about this offseason, them changing coaches, them changing personnel. They've changed their philosophy as far as an organization. So I believe that they will, like Terry Bradshaw said, I believe they will change coach at the end of the season. And you can look for him to be one of the top candidates in Cleveland. John Dorsey with the Green Bay background, a lot of these general managers in this new NFL, they go with who they trust.
Yep.
Not necessarily who they think is best. Who they trust to be able to make decisions as far as them moving forward as a team, general manager and head coach moving forward at the same. So, yes, I believe he is going to be dismissed from Green Bay. But I can believe he'll be fired probably that first Monday after the season. Mm-hmm. On that Tuesday or Wednesday, he could be rolling into Cleveland.
You can be the right person to get Cleveland from A to B, but that doesn't mean you're the right person to get Green Bay from B to C. You know what I mean? Like, you can be the right person for a certain job where a team is in trying to get into contention, but not necessarily the right person to take a team that's in contention over the top into Super Bowl favorite. I think that's the place Mike McCarthy finds himself.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter, Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.